Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our faith radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Connecting Faith. My name is Joe Rathmanner. Today we get to talk parenting today. Very excited about that because I am a parent. I'm always looking for new things that I can apply to my life selfishly, but really just want you to be able to get some great information from an expert in the parenting field. I was just talking with my producer here, Ryan, and Ryan does not have children yet. And Ryan, what were you just saying about children, being a parent?
First of all, that it sounds really difficult, and I was wondering if there ever came a moment when somebody actually said, I am ready right now to be a parent and have children.
Well, people may have said that at some point in time, but they are falsely confident if they say that they are ready. I was just explaining that it's just such a humbling experience because you do feel like I'm an adult. I've had some success in my life. I have a strong marriage. It could be time. I could be ready for this. And yet challenges continue to come up where I just continue to feel like a failure. Just this morning, I was saying I made my son cry this morning because he was practicing his piano and I was trying to help him get on the beat. And of course, I made my 8-year-old cry because he was very frustrated. So came to work thinking, I have failed again. It's not fun, Ryan.
I'm sorry.
You will never be ready. But when you have your child, then you are ready because you have no choice.
That's just like swimming. Sometimes you just have to go out in the middle of the lake and find your way back to shore.
And throw your kid off the dock and he'll make it. Oh, yes. Well, I was just kind of remembering something my father said when I was considering this parenting thing. He said, some of the greatest joys that you'll ever experience on this planet will have to do with your children. And some of the greatest challenges you ever experience on this planet will have to do with your children. Mm. And that seems to, of course, make sense now that I have a couple of them. Well, it's certainly one of the roles that provides this material for parenting to feel very elated, but also very exasperated, often within the same day. It's not as easy it could seem to be, but God's Word has given us some wonderful instruction, and we're going to get into that today. My guest today says it really boils down to both love and respect, and also the family crazy cycle that can develop as a result of both. So let me introduce you to my guest for today, and we'll let him explain what that means. Dr. Emerson Eggerich is president and founder of Love and Respect Ministries, an internationally renowned speaker and best-selling author of Love and Respect, The Love She Most Desires, The Respect He Most Desperately Needs, and has studied the family dynamics for more than 30 years as a counselor and a pastor. Dr. Eggerich and his wife, Sarah, developed the Love and Respect Conference, through which they provide these life-changing resources for over 50,000 married, divorced, separated, dating, and single people. And they both do this live and also by video each year. And you can find more information on that at loveandrespect.com. Welcome, Dr. Eggerich. It's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. And I was overhearing the conversation between the two of you. And I have to tell you, I was fully confident as a parent. I went into it just tremendously confident. And it would have been a great parent had it not been for my children.
Oh, no. They do mess it up, don't they?
That's our experience, isn't it? You said it's both joyful as well as sorrowful, but in the end, it's worth it. It is worth it indeed.
I remember throwing a book against the wall, almost hitting my husband, a book on sleep, on infants and sleep. And I had a non-sleeper colicky baby. And I remember throwing that book saying, why doesn't he do what the book says?
I appreciate your transparency.
Yes. Well, sometimes a little bit too much so. Well, tell us why this is a great topic for parents today, and I'm guessing for parents at any time, but why today? Why love and respect in the family?
Well, I could have written this book before the marriage book, but I waited until my children were adults so that they could speak back into it, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And, oh, that's scary.
Even though I have my PhD in family studies and I did my PhD dissertation on effective fathering, I made a decision early on to wait on this topic until the kids could speak back into it. And that was one of my commitments. Plus, my own family of origin issues. My dad attempted to strangle my mother when I was 2 1/2. I witnessed that. When I was 11, I learned that my dad had committed adultery. I picked up a butcher knife around that age and told my mom I was going to kill my dad. It was false bravado. But soon after that, mom planned for me to go to a military school. At age 13, I went off to Missouri Military Academy and was there until the next 5 years, for 5 years of my life. Because of the family of origin issues and the struggles, we were not Christ followers. Fortunately, and I heard one of your advertisements, I came to Christ through a Billy Graham film, and I was thinking about West Point. I'd met with a congressman, met with the president of the military school, but when I came to Christ at this Billy Graham film, I learned that Billy had gone to Wheaton. So my freshman year, I entered Wheaton, and my mom was watching the change in my life, my dad, my sister, my brother-in-law, who's a professor, and all four of them prayed to receive Christ my freshman year at Wheaton. And our family changed. But the wounds that I had from those early years, I had to work through. So from a family of origin issue, I looked at everything in the Bible dealing with parenting. As a parent, I looked at everything in the Bible dealing with parenting, plus the best academic research. So in a sense, this book is 40 years in the making.
Well, and I loved what you wrote in the beginning of your book, saying that the Bible actually has very clear instruction for parents, how to parent, and that sometimes we use more general statements, whereas the Bible is actually quite specific. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Well, and I appreciate you recognizing that. Like all of us, we look for principles that could apply to any number of topics, but it's like we apply 1 Corinthians 13 to marriage. But Paul talked about marriage in 1 Corinthians 7. 1 Corinthians 13, the author is not talking about marriage. It doesn't mean that those principles don't apply. It just means that's not the point of the text. 1 Corinthians 7 is the point about marriage. And as a pastor, I study the Bible 30 hours a week for nearly 20 years. And so it was important for me to really come to grips with what the author intended. And, you know, it's a novel idea to look at everything in the Bible that it pertains to parenting. And it was encouraging to me, a blessing to me, to see what the Lord had said to me about parenting, what the Lord had intended my parents to do toward me, and it's very specific, as you reference.
Well, tell me a little bit about how you came up with this crazy cycle and how that applies to the family.
Well, to this point, I think we all know that in the Ten Commandments, one of them is honor father and mother. There isn't a person on the planet, I can imagine, that hasn't at one time or another heard, if they've had exposure to literature, about honoring father and mother. It's one of the commands given to us through Moses. And Jesus quotes that in Matthew 15, where he says, God said, he doesn't say Moses said, he said, God said, honor your father and mother. And I was not a Christ follower, and so as best I can, I've tried to make my worldview the worldview Jesus had. He believed in a revelatory worldview. He believed God was there and that he had spoken. And this was one of his commands from his heart to us. And then Paul quotes it in Ephesians 6, honor your father and mother. And then I noticed, Joe, that there is no command of children to love mommy and daddy. They're only commanded to honor. And then I looked at the other side. Parents are not commanded to honor their children. It doesn't mean we can dishonor them. It just is not a command there. In fact, parents are not even commanded to agape love their children. And as I looked at this, I realized God has put unconditional love in our hearts toward our children. We feel this unconditional love, but our children don't always feel what we feel toward them. But the crazy cycle happens this way. When a child feels unloved, it's very natural. It's within their sinful nature to react in a way that feels disrespectful to us. And that's why God commands children to honor and to respect, because they have a proclivity to be disrespectful when they feel unloved. And when parents feel disregarded, disrespected, they can take up offense even at their children, and we end up reacting in a way that feels unloving to our children. And that's why when I was little, I'd throw a temper tantrum, and I'd say to my mom, you don't love me. I never said you don't respect me. And she never said, young man, you're being unloving right now. She said, young man, you're being disrespectful right now. So expositionally, as well as experientially, we recognize this difference, and it spins on a crazy cycle. Without love, a child reacts without respect. Without respect, a parent reacts without love. Without love, a child reacts without respect. Without respect, a parent reacts without love. And this thing can spin out of control in 37 seconds. That makes sense?
Absolutely. So what can start the cycle? What might make a child feel unloved?
Well, you have the range of issues. I mean, the more drastic would be my dad. My mom had several businesses, one of which was teaching swimming. And I always liked to get in the pool with my dad, but apparently as a little boy, I irritated him, and he just stayed his distance from me because he didn't have a safe zone. He'd play, and then he'd explode. And apparently I was irritating him, and he got in the pool with me, and I was all over him, and he put me under the water, and I thought he was playing as he stood on me. He was 6'3", 250 pounds. And now I try to get up after a minute, and he's not letting me up. And I'm about to inhale water and drown and die, and I'm petrified when at the last second he lets me up. And as I went back in the water, I looked at my dad, and I thought, a daddy shouldn't do that to his boy. Mm-hmm. And that's why Paul said, fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they lose heart. Not only did I lose heart, Joe, my dad lost my heart. And those would be the kinds of extreme illustrations, the committing of adultery, the fact that I saw at 2.5, my dad attempt to strangle. Those wound a child and cause a child tremendous insecurity. And that's why I would scream at my dad from a distance at age 11, why don't you go see that other woman? I was very disrespectful, very disrespectful, but I was insecure and feeling unloved. And one of the challenges for us as parents is to ask this question, is my child coming across in a disrespectful way? Am I or have I done something that feels very unloving to my child? That's the first and foremost thing that we've got to decode in these more drastic situations. I mean, it's sad for my dad to take up offense when I'm hurting. And that's a challenge we're extending to moms and dads, to make sure that we go back and ask ourselves, did I say or do something that was quite unloving to my child in the first place?
So you devote a whole chapter to being able to decode these things and to be understanding. And God commands us to that as well, to be understanding and to love one another. So what is a step that parents can take to be more understanding and kind of decode what is going on with my child?
Well, I think to that point, there are many times that children appear disrespectful to us and they're not feeling unloved at all. Mm-hmm. Now, having said what I just said, and in fact, one of the points we make in the book is that because God commands children to honor, and they are moral spiritual beings who can do this, parents need to be honored. Parents need to be respected. This is not rooted in our narcissism. It's not our egotistical demeanor. This is a true need, not just a desire in parents. It is a legitimate need that God has designed. However, and the critical question is this, what do we do when our child is failing to meet that need? Because kids are going to be childish. They are not always going to respond in ways that feel respectful to us, though they have no intentions of being disrespectful. So parenting is for adults only, and we can't do this in our spare time. It's critical that we understand, first, I'm feeling disrespected, but now how am I going to respond to this way in a way that does not feel unloving to my child? Just because I need respect in no way and absolutely never justifies an unloving reaction, as though somehow that's going to motivate my child to honor and respect me. That's ludicrous. The legitimate ends does not justify an unholy means. So one of the challenges to decode, I mean, Paul said, when I was a child, I acted as a child, I reasoned as a child, I spoke as a child, but when I became an adult, I did away with childish things. You know, in that movie Hook, where we have Robin Williams, who is Peter Pan, he's still in his human state, so to speak, and he's with Jack, his son, on an airplane, and Jack is throwing a ball that hits the ceiling of the airplane, and the oxygen masks are dislodged. And Robin comes uncorked and says, quit acting like a kid. And Jack says, but I am a kid. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges for all of us is to realize our kids are going to be childish, and they're not trying to be disrespectful. They're going to spill the milk, even though we warned them countless times. When my son was 10, David decided to be a baseball pitcher in the major league, so he's going to practice. And unbeknownst to me, he put a square tape on the back of the garage, which was aluminum siding, and he had the pitcher's mind, about 30 balls, and he peppered the back of the garage, just dented it everywhere. But I didn't discipline him because I remember when I was his age, I broke every pumpkin in a neighbor's pumpkin patch, about 50 of them, And after I destroyed them all, I looked back and I went, uh-oh. I wasn't thinking. I didn't do it to diss my neighbor. I was a kid. I was childish. In fact, David asked me as an adult, hey, Dad, what did you feel about that after I peppered the back of the garage? I said, I was depressed for weeks. He said, really? I said, yeah, you never hit the strike zone.
Touche. Well, we've been talking with Dr. Emerson Eggerich. We're talking about a book he's written called Love and Respect in the Family, learning about what a child needs and what a parent needs as well. We're going to come back right after the break and chat more with Dr. Emerson. If you have a question, something that has kind of spurred an interest as you've been listening to us, give us a call. We'd love to give your question or comment on the air at 1-877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or if you'd like to email your question in, you can certainly do that as well. I'll try to get that on the air at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith and you can submit your question that way. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back in just a minute with Dr. Emerson Eggerich.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
At Northwestern, your student gets even more than a first-rate education. They get first-rate community. Discover what makes Northwestern life so special at Spring Preview Days, March 28th, April 4th, or April 11th. It's a full day for your student to visit a class, meet other students, eat the food, talk with professors, and feel just a bit of what Christ-like community is really all about. Visit unwsp.edu/visit for more. University of Northwestern, St. Paul.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we're talking today with Dr. Emerson Eggerich. He's written a book called Love and Respect in the Family, and we've been talking a little bit about the family crazy cycle where children do not feel loved and parents do not feel respected and how that goes on and on. Dr. Eggerich, you said that sometimes parents react in a way that doesn't feel loving to our children, and sometimes that happens when we're either exhausted, frustrated, or kind of taken off our game, so to speak. How can we learn to not do that?
Well, that's the reality of parenting, and we're all in the same boat, and we all know that. I mean, there isn't anything about this that we don't know. This is common sense. We know in an ideal world we should be responding lovingly, and we just need these moments of inspiration and reminders that we can do great damage, and we can lose our children's heart. That's why Paul says to fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Or as I referenced earlier, fathers, do not exasperate your children so they lose heart. Or Titus 2, the older women are to encourage the younger women to love their children. That's phileo, not agape. Mothers become negative, exhausted, unfriendly, and they need that older woman just to encourage her to say, sweetie, we've been there, we understand that. This is not a popularity contest. We're not talking about being friendly so that you can win the prize here, but you must not let your negativity override. Mothers will say that they don't like their children at times, that in the home they're totally different than they are in what we call stranger groups, where women are, they allow for interruption, they're deferential, they're sweet, they're kind, but in the home they can get just fatigued to such a point that they lose it, and they've got to pull back from that. And particularly with mothers who are becoming more isolated from older women, they need to just simply get a game plan in here. You need that older godly woman to encourage you, because it can really get ugly, and you're going to damage the sweet spirits of the children just as fathers can. So the challenge, of course, is to, again, just be reminded of this. But I also like to give the classic illustration of the child. She's 8. She's supposed to be home at 5:15 for dinner. It's now 5:45. You call her little friend. They don't know where she is. The friend has come home but didn't see your daughter. Now it's 6. Now it's 6:10. And now you're thinking, is she kidnapped? Is she raped? Is she murdered? Is she going to be lying in a ditch dead? And all of these thoughts, we cry out to God, I love this child, God, I love this, oh God, please help me, please, oh God. Mm-hmm. And just then the back door opens and she comes in whistling. And what's our response?
It's not good.
That's right, you see. And so the love we feel for her is not felt by her. And we all are guilty of this. We all fall short. No one's going to be a perfect parent. There were only two perfect parents, so to speak, Adam and Eve, and they had Cain and Abel, Cain killing Abel. And so there's no perfect family, and we've got to give ourselves some grace, but we've got to know there's a line over which we can step. And that's where my dad didn't learn that and how that wounded me and left this scar, which is why I have such a compassion to help parents not step over that line. And that proverbial coming through the back door, we scream at her, where have you been? And she has no idea the depth of feeling we have. And that's why we need to reinforce to our children. One of the things I tried to do with my kids when I was disciplining them, I'd say, I love you so much, if you were in a burning car, I'd come in after you and save you, and I'd die in my attempt to save you. I love you that much. But you've been rude to your mother, and you get up to your room for a timeout. It's unacceptable. This disrespect is unacceptable. We're not going to talk this way to each other, but you need to know I love you so much I would die for you if I don't kill you first.
So parents do tend to kind of beat themselves up when we do things that aren't appropriate, even in my silly little example of this morning. And we rectified that before I sent him off to school. But boy, I just, the things that go replay in my head of, oh, I could have said that better. I could have done that better. You know, is he feeling okay? Those things, they'll wreck me throughout the day.
That's right. And mothers especially can beat themselves up. And again, children know that mommies love them. And there is this sense that mothers will always love, that mommies love. And women are good at saying, I'm sorry, and making it up. And this is something that, you know, mothers need to just realize they have a lot of virtue in the midst of those periodic failings. And kids know that. And kids will also guilt trip mom. And that's why one has to step back and ask, is there really a lot of intrinsic evil going on in relationship to my child? If the answer is no, particularly if he was out of line and you challenged him, you know, maybe the method of doing it wasn't the best, but he knows. And one of the things that I'm campaigning on is that there are a lot of parents out there who are living in shame and guilt because we have wrongly interpreted Scripture. For instance, Proverbs 22, where it says, bring up a child in the way that he goes, and when he's older, not depart from it. That's not a promise. That's a principle, because you have all kinds of scriptures in Proverbs about children who inflict pain upon their parents. They do violence to their parents. They steal from their parents. They lie from their parents. And Solomon, who wrote Proverbs, I realized one day, was writing to Rehoboam, that refrain, my son, my son, my son, my son. I mean, it's constant throughout Proverbs. And that was his first and foremost audience, his boy, Rehoboam. And Joe, when Rehoboam became king of Israel, he was one of the most wicked dudes alive. He did not listen to one thing his father, the wisest man on the planet, said. And Yahweh had appeared two times to Solomon, and Rehoboam knew that. The point is, children are moral spiritual beings who will make their own ultimate choices. We cannot control the ultimate outcomes in our kids. We can control them when they're tots and prevent them from crossing the busy street. But when they move into teens, we can't control them 24/7. We must move into counsel, and they may or may not listen to it. And then there comes the moment of casting them off. A young man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. So there is control, yes, to a degree, but then it moves to counsel, then to casting off. The bottom line is, ultimately, I cannot control what my child chooses to do or to believe. I can tell them to say thank you, but I cannot coerce them to have a grateful heart. So the bottom line is, the only thing I can really control are my actions and my reactions to the spirit of my child. And I also looked at everything the Bible is saying to parents about parenting, and I put that in an acronym called GUIDES, G-U-I-D-E-S. We're to be giving, understanding, instructing, disciplining, encouraging, and supplicating. And those are all based on a salient scripture or scriptures to parents about parenting that I referenced earlier. This is what Abba Father has revealed to me about parenting. And he calls me to stay in this game plan. And here's the deal. It may or may not result in our children choosing our faith and values. But what this does do, it creates the most loving environment that best motivates my children to choose my faith and values. And one of the illustrations I like to give is the father, the prodigal. We all know the story of the prodigal who requested his portion of the inheritance and indulged it in sensual living in another country. And we know that boy was thoughtless and selfish and indulgent. What we don't pay attention to is there was a firstborn.
I'm going to stop you there so we can finish the rest of this story after this break. We want to hear it, and I want to give you the time to do it. So we're talking with Dr. Emerson Igarich today. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
We were made to be courageous, and we're taking back the fight. We were made to be courageous, and it starts with us tonight.
Thanks so much for joining us back again. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and today I have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Emerson Igarich. He's president and founder of Love and Respect Ministries, an internationally renowned speaker and best-selling author of several books, including Love and Respect, The Love She Most Desires, and Love and Respect, The Respect He Desperately Needs. Talking about marriage, but today we're talking about family, love and respect in the family, and the crazy cycle that exists when kids don't feel loved and parents don't feel respected. And Dr. Igarich, you were bringing up the story of the prodigal, and boy, that just seems so relevant for parents today, because it happens more often than not that we have a prodigal son or daughter. And can you jump back into that story and tell us about it?
Exactly. No, and it's a story to encourage parents who are beating themselves up, thinking that they may not be parenting God's way. And one of the points I want to make is that we can parent God's way even if our children are not responding. And the story of the prodigal and the father of the prodigal and the older son illustrates this point, in that, as we indicated, the prodigal, we all know, indulged and took his inheritance. And there was a firstborn, though, who, when the prodigal returns, the father says, my son, who's been dead, is now alive, who's lost, has now been found, let's celebrate. And the older son wants nothing to do with it, and there's no indication that he ever has anything to do with it. He is self-righteous, judgmental, and angry. And now the question I ask parents today is, suppose that secondborn is out indulging and the firstborn is self-righteous and angry at home. Would we have that father, who was full of compassion according to the text, would we have him come and lecture us for 3 days on how to be a good parent?
Mm-hmm. Probably
and
not.
The answer is, no, we wouldn't. And yet Jesus Christ holds him up as an illustration of Abba, Father, that this father was parenting God's way, even though he had two sons who were not responding. I like to ask it this way. Is our Heavenly Father a bad father because we disobey him? The answer is absolutely not. And here's a message that I'm seeking to get out to many parents. Many who are listening are parenting God's way. They are loving their children unto Jesus Christ. They are bringing their identity in Jesus Christ to their parenting. They're not deriving their identity from their parenting. They are not putting their children in a position to perform at a certain level to make themselves feel happy. They are staying on a game plan, which is the G-O-I-D-E-S. They are giving, they are understanding, they're instructing, they're disciplining, they're encouraging, they're supplicating. And they fail like we all fail. There is no perfect parent. But in the general course, they are touching the heart of Jesus Christ. They are doing what God asked them to do. There is no intrinsic evil. And yet the child is not turning out at this point to their satisfaction. And what I'm finding, Joe, is that some parents are getting discouraged. They're letting these defeats defeat them. They're taking their eye off the ball. They're looking at the child's behavior rather than trusting that they are doing what God is calling them to do. I believe there are going to be many parents who stand before Jesus Christ, and they will hear, "Well done, good and faithful parent." I mean, we need to rightly interpret Scripture. Jesus said in Matthew that there would be children who would turn their parents over to the authorities to be murdered for their faith in Jesus Christ. Jesus does not condemn those parents. And furthermore, many of us who have our academic bent have this idea that good parents produce good children and bad parents produce bad kids, and that's it. But the Bible adds two more. There are good parents with bad kids, the father of the prodigal, and there are bad parents with good kids. Josiah became king at 8. At age 16, he began to seek the Lord, and he reformed Israel, though his father and grandfather were some of the most wicked kings in Israel. When Paul writes Ephesians and Colossians, he writes to the children themselves. Children, obey your father and mother in the Lord. This is pleasing to the Lord. He saw children as moral spiritual beings who make their own decisions. Now, this is important because those of us who had bad parents, are we a hopeless, helpless victim? Are we destined to be bad? Absolutely not. You are free, and you can take a different course, as I did. Also, if we teach this, are we giving bad parents permission to be bad parents? There will always be people who twist the truth. Satan twisted the scriptures with Jesus. But I think we've withheld truth from many parents out there who are good souls, who are parenting God's way, but right now they do not have children who are responding to them. And they are either concluding that God lied to them, falsely interpreting Proverbs 22, or they have just become so defeated that they feel like they are no good, and they've stopped ministering for Christ because they feel like they are second rate. We are campaigning to help parents stay the game plan. It's not over with yet, even when your children turn adults. And when I wrote this book, I wanted to quit a couple times, but my children said, Dad, if you can't give yourself grace, how do you expect the readers to give themselves grace? And I say that because I remembered all the bad things I did. My kids didn't remember them. And the things that they remembered that I did bad, I didn't recall those. And I felt such shame that I'd hurt them so deeply. But my three kids, now as adults, are the ones who endorse this book. On the back of the book, they are the ones who are endorsing this. But there were many Friday nights when Sarah and I sat and we were absolutely feeling like failures. And she looked at me, you're the PhD in family. What should we do? I said, I have no idea.
That's a lot of pressure. Well, the chapter that you devote to encouraging parents to be loving despite their children's response is absolutely worth the price of the book. So I would highly encourage people, if you're struggling with that, to check that out, because it is very encouraging, and you use scripture to go along with what God has called us to do and be as parents. So love that. You also, I think the most fascinating chapter for me was parenting in pink and blue, and talking about how parenting girls and boys, that you need to work as a team, as a husband and wife, according to the gender of each child. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, one of the fascinating things that I have discovered, and I'm going to write a book on this as well, mothers and sons in particular. I mean, I think we've done a pretty good job of coaching fathers to be more loving toward their daughters. Say, she looks lovely, she comes down in a new dress. It doesn't mean that the dads are perfect at that. We need ongoing reminders. But we're very conscious. Mothers are very conscious of helping dads in relationship to their daughters. However, I talk about the importance of doing respect talk with our sons, even in the early years, that mothers are loving on their kids, and they need to continue to love on their kids. But they need to change their language, particularly as the boys turn into their teen years. Instead of saying, I love you, say, you know what, I really respect this about you. Or, you know what, I want to honor you for telling me the truth here. You know, I want to salute you. These are what I call respect talk expressions. And these touch the soul of a boy in a way that the love talk does not. It doesn't mean that he doesn't need love. But one of the things that mothers say to me is that little boy that was there prior to age 4, he begins to change. And he's not there. He's not as affectionate. He's pulling back, and particularly in the teen years. And so I encourage them to get this book and begin to listen to what I'm saying about how to use a different vocabulary, because he'll respond to that. And then secondly, talk less. Mothers are trying to get through to their boys by talking and the 20 questions and trying to draw them out so they can connect. Girls respond to that, but boys less so, typically speaking. I say this, if you got two boys who are playing catch in the backyard, go out and sit in a chair and just watch them for 15 minutes. Don't say a word. Just watch them. Boys love their mommies to watch them. Just watch and don't talk. Now when you go back in, you say, would you go pick up your room? They'll run right up and do it, because you've energized them. The problem with many mothers is they don't understand what energizes little boys. Now, when they hear me, they suddenly realize, yeah, I do. That just makes perfect sense. I know that. I guess I didn't know it, but I did know it. It's the idea of talking less and watching them and doing activities with them shoulder to shoulder. Even when you're rebuking him, instead of looking right at him and pointing at him, go out into a swing and shoulder to shoulder, swing back and forth. Or go walk in the evening and don't look at him. Instead, give voice to your concern without gazing at him. Little boys will shut down because of the look. Now, girls instinctively know mothers emotionally upset, and there's an empathy that women have with women. But little boys think you're using this as an opportunity to shame him. And so don't look so much at him. Talk less. And when you do talk, say some things that sound honoring to him and watch what happens and write me. Go to loveandrespect.com. We're compiling these stories. I have hundreds of them to encourage mothers to reach the hearts of their sons.
Well, I'm going to go off topic a little bit, but tell me how this relates to husbands and wives as well, because I believe there's a correlation there.
Absolutely. There is the man in every boy. There is the woman in every girl. Jesus said in Matthew 19, "Have you not read? He who made them from the beginning made them male and female." Male and female. I believe what Jesus said. I believe the Bible. I believe in a revelatory worldview. I believe God is there. I believe Abba has created us. And he's created little boys to become men, and he's created little girls to become women. And one of the things we talk about in our Love and Respect book is men need to feel respected, not because they deserve it, but because they have a need. But also, most men are assured of a woman's love. Women love to love at the level of intimacy. And so when you ask Harry, "Hey, Harry, yeah, does your wife love you?" "Oh, yeah, yeah." "Hey, Harry, what? Does she like you?" "No, not today. In fact, she didn't like me yesterday either." Men feel this issue of respect in a way that many women don't understand. And so one of the things that we encourage women to do, don't write the love note, write what I call the respect note. Say it in a way that's going to be meaningful to him. For instance, most men will die for their wives. Burglar comes in, murderer comes in, tries to threaten a woman. He'll die in his attempt to kill, to save her. We just saw that in Colorado, in Aurora, where the man opened up fire and four boyfriends threw themselves on their girlfriends and died. And those girls walked out of the theater. And many feminist media women were stunned. They couldn't understand how that happened. There isn't one man in America who's stunned by that. Men die. We give our lives. So write a respect note, something like this: "I was thinking of you today, that you would literally die for me. That is an overwhelming thought to me. Thank you." And then sign it this way, ladies: "Listen to me, with all my respect." Don't use the love word. "With all my respect," and then say, "the one who still admires you." I'm going to make a prediction. He will not throw that card away. He'll put it in his Bible. He'll take it to the office and set it on the corner of his desk. Now, you don't do this to manipulate him. You do it because he has a need, and you meet a need that he has as an end in itself. And when you meet that need, it is deep. At our conference, when I give this illustration, men begin to weep. This is so deep. But what we've done is we've taken this off the radar screen, because when we talk about respecting men, women say, "Gag me."
Well, that makes me sad.
It makes me sad because they'll say, "Well, Dr. Emerson, I don't feel any respect. It'd be hypocritical for me to show it. He's not superior to me. I'm not inferior to him. He hasn't earned it. He doesn't deserve it. I'm not going to give him license to do what he wants to do. I'm not going to return to patriarchy and fear male dominance. I'm not going to lose a sense of myself or a sense of my identity. I'm not going to be a doormat. I'm not going to subject myself to emotional abuse. But other than these things, Dr. Emerson, I'm really open to hearing what you have to say about this."
Wow.
And, Joe, that's where we're at. It's what I call the mantra. Women want respect, but when it comes to the idea of respecting a man, there's a complete turnoff. Not one university will set aside grant money to study this question: how to show respect to your husband because he's a man. And yet every man serves and dies for honor. He gives his very life. And great leaders, great male leaders toward other men, we motivate each other by honoring each other. We don't see this as rooted in narcissism or egoism. We see it as rooted in a need. And when you meet that need, men have affection. No husband feels fond feelings of love and affection in his heart toward a wife he thinks despises who he is as a human being. But when he knows that you believe in him in spite of his performance, when you admire the man deep within, not the bad behavior, his heart softens and he moves toward you to connect.
So bring that back to the family as far as how a father has an amazing ability to show love to his daughter.
Oh, absolutely. Off the charts. In fact, we just were with Dave Ramsey and Rachel, his daughter, in Verizon Center in Dallas. 7,000 attended. Henry Cloud was there, Meg Meeker, and Joy, my daughter, and me, and then Andy Andrews. And it was an absolutely phenomenal time. And Meg Meeker has written the book, Fathers and Daughters. And she unpacks, as an MD, the incredible, incredible impact that a father has on the daughter. And I can't say enough about this. And the role that you have as a father, I mean, one of the points she makes is every child is assured of mommy's love, but she's not as assured of daddy's love. And the child needs to know, and physical affection, of affirmation, her whole identity is wrapped up in that father. And I've said, you can have a 40-year-old woman write a book called Daddy's Little Girl. You won't have a 40-year-old man write a book, Mommy's Little Boy. The feeling of endearment, the feeling of tenderness that a woman has toward her dad never leaves, and he is her hero. And when he speaks into her, she can change the world. And when he's degrading, she feels little confidence and can pull back. I cannot say enough, gentlemen, and this is what saddens me, Joe. We have desecrated men. We have shamed men. We belittle men. All the TV shows. It is so sad. There was a four-year-old girl came down and said to her mommy, she was watching the show, is Daddy as dumb as the men on TV?
Mm.
And what we have to do is say to the men, I salute you. You are a man of honor. The culture is demeaning you, but your role is absolutely incredible. And I, for one, want to salute you and high-five you and say, do not give up, even though there is such belittling going on. Who you are in relationship to that precious little girl that you carry on your shoulders is immeasurable.
Well, and it makes a big difference on who that little girl is going to choose to be her partner for the rest of her life as well.
That is correct.
Well, we have some great conversation with Dr. Emerson Igarich. He's written a book called Love and Respect in the Family, and we're talking about parents and children and the gift that God has given us in both, in parents and children. We'll talk more about that. We have a few more minutes left. If you want to get your comment on the air, you can give us a call at 877-933-2484 at myfaithradio.com. If you'd rather email that in, I have one to read when we come back on Connecting Faith.
From Pure Flix Entertainment comes God's Not Dead, the movie. College freshman Josh Wheaton finds his faith challenged on his first day of philosophy class by the dogmatic Professor Radisson and has to choose between his faith and his future. When your faith is tested, would you fight for what you believe?
God's not dead, he's surely alive.
God's Not Dead, the movie. Now play, rated PG. More information available at godsnotdeadthemovie.com.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
My husband drives a semi, and he goes this way Monday through Friday. And he's grown tremendous through this radio station and one or two others along the way, and I thank you so much. It's meant a lot to our entire family. It's a miracle. I thank God for your radio station.
Connecting your faith to everyday life. Faith Radio.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Today we're talking love and respect in the family with Dr. Emerson Igarich. And you had talked about that acronym GUIDES for explaining how we are to parent: giving, understanding, instructing, disciplining, encouraging, and I forgot S.
Supplicating.
Praying. So you mentioned that the first step in understanding your child is realizing how much they need to feel loved. How can we get that in our heads as parents?
Well, I mean, God designed that child to need our love, and they long for that love. And I think every piece of research out there that's done with the parent-child relationship would reinforce that as the salient need in every child. It is the primary need. And again, I just have to ask myself, is that which I'm about to say or do going to feel loving to my child or unloving? And it doesn't mean that we are passive. It doesn't mean that we try to be popular. We can raise our voices. A lot of it has to do with word choice, as I pointed out. You know, my children at points would say, you know, you're the worst dad on the planet. And I said, yes, I'm finally number one at something. And again, I would die for you if you're in a burning car, but we're not going to talk to me that way. Get up to your room for a 15-minute timeout. I love you, but get up there. And we've got to be firm, and we've got to be in charge. And here's the deal. Someone's going to control. It's either going to be our child controlling us, or we're going to control our child in these early years. There's no question about that. And this is where the parent has to decide, am I going to be the parent here, or am I going to be the child? There's no neutral grounds, and it means being firm. But a lot of it has to do with how we express ourselves. And some of us are humorous, and we are funny people, but we lose that with our children. We need to lighten up. We're going to die, okay? And time is going by quickly. So the point is, we need to do again what we know. And it's a matter of being reminded, even in a conversation like this, not to lose it. Because If we are unloving to motivate our children to show us more respect, that's complete idiocy.
And they probably won't follow that at all in the next instance.
I shut down, and I completely pulled back from my dad. And it was not for years until after I came to Christ, and then he came to Christ, that that relationship went in a different direction. And I would say it's never too late. I mean, one of the things we're getting by way of response to the Love and Respect in the Family book is that parents of adult children are seeing this thing turn around. And even adult daughters, for instance, they hear what I'm saying, and I say, you know, you feel that maybe your dad didn't love you. From ages 13 to 18, he didn't talk to you. I've had so many girls. He'd take me to school and he wouldn't talk to me. We'd do this and he wouldn't talk to me. Therefore, my dad did not love me. And I said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Let's reconsider this. Did you have a lot of drama? Were there times when you came uncorked with your dad and said things that were disrespectful? Yes, I did, a lot. But he should know I didn't mean it. Well, maybe he shouldn't. But on the other side, maybe it's not the fact that your dad is unloving. It's the fact that he felt you didn't respect him. And so when men feel disrespected, they go quiet. They pull back. Here's what I want you to do. Write your dad. You're 24 years old now. You're out of the home. But write him a respect note. List out on that the 10 things about him you respect and give it to him as a gift. And Joe, I've done this so much now that the mother calls the daughter after the father receives the note. He just got your note. He's in the bedroom crying. He's in the bedroom crying. Or if he doesn't cry, and I had a girl say, I did that, but my dad didn't cry. I said, well, that's not the point of the story, but what did he do? Well, he wrote me a note. I said, yeah. He never writes notes. Okay, first gesture. What else? He told me in the note that he loves me. He's never told me that he loved me. Okay, there's the second gesture.
That's better than crying.
Oh, it's huge. And this is so revolutionary that I give voice to it in as many times as I can, because those young women out there who feel that their relationship with their dad is bad, that he doesn't love me, for the reason we stated how important that is earlier about how the father affects the daughter, but you're not a helpless, hopeless victim. You can turn the corner on this, and it can reveal to you that your dad is not as unloving as you think. Give him that gift of respect and watch what happens.
So in part three, you write about the rewarded cycle. So what happens if we actually do these things?
Well, again, there's no guarantee. And this is something that is painful for parents. I had a woman write me and say, God lied to me. I hate God. I've rejected God, because she said, God promised to bring my children. You know, if I did what God wanted me to do, my children would turn out well. Well, Jesus had his Judas. I mean, you can't say that. Jesus didn't teach this. It increases the probability, because we're creating the most loving environment that best motivates our children to choose our faith and value. And when they see our faith, when they see our real deal, they're going to hear the melody and ask about the words. There is just a tremendous potential, but you cannot make a guarantee. And so the rewarded cycle says that a parent loves unto Jesus Christ. Beyond the shoulder of your child stands Jesus Christ. And you are to do the loving thing. You're to be giving. You're to be understanding. You're to instruct. You're to discipline. You're to encourage. You're to supplicate. And we do it according to what seems best. Hebrews 12 said we had earthly fathers who discipline us according to what seems best. And I love that, seems best. There's no absolute formula. There are principles. There are guidelines. And we are to stay the course with the hope that our children will see us as the real deal. But I was just on James Robinson, and one of the gals that does research for him said, my mom and dad had two of us. I was the perfect child, straight A, everything. My brother became addicted. He's 35. He's been addicted ever since high school and had the same environment. And my parents were not to blame here. I know my brother. He made wrong choices. And yet we talked about the fact that parents rehearse in their mind all day long, week after week, month after month. What did I do? What did I do? And I say, look, have three pastors sit down with you and three godly wise people and go over what you did. And if they say there's no intrinsic evil here, you didn't do it. Yeah, you got angry, you got upset. Yes, we all have isolated moments. We throw the book up against the wall as you did. But those are not representative of our heart by any stretch of the imagination. And therefore, we need to just have confidence that we're going to stand before the Lord on that day hearing, well done, good and faithful parent. But Lord, my child didn't choose you. I understand that, but you did what I called you to do as a parent, and you were faithful to me. You were faithful to me. Now, some people say, well, aren't you giving justification for bad parents to be bad parents if we don't say to them that if their kids turn out bad, it's their fault? I'm not going to fear preaching the truth because of my fear of what people are going to do with the truth. The truth is, we're to parent God's way, and there's no absolute guarantee our kids will choose to trust Christ. They're individuals who have to make that choice. They're no grandchildren in the kingdom. But when we then prevent people from hearing the truth because there's some person out there that's going to twist the truth, we do many people a great disservice, and I'm not going to do that. I talked to Mike Hyde, who had been CEO at Thomas Nelson. I said, is there anybody out there espousing this on parenting to your knowledge? He said, not like this. And I said, then I need to get this message out there to encourage these people. Betty, James Robinson's wife, was saying there's so many parents who live in shame. And I said, that's right. And we need to relieve them. But not only that, they have brought pleasure to Christ in their obedience. They've obeyed the command to parents about parenting, and they have touched the heart of Christ, and they need me to say this to them. They need to hear this, Joe.
Those are very wise words. I did get a comment from one listener, from Egan, who said, never have I laughed so hard and learned so much in a day and a half as when he came to one of your conferences. So why don't you just, in the last minute that we have, tell us what kind of resources you have available for parents who are listening and want to learn more.
Well, thank you. No, we have our website, loveandrespect.com, loveandrespect.com. And they can find resources there, both in marriage as well as our new parenting book. And we have our seven-hour conference that Sarah and I do. We've been doing it since 1999. Sarah and I have been married 40 years, and we still get on the crazy cycle. Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. She chased me around the house once with my book and said, what would you say to a husband who's treating his wife the way you're treating me right now? So we say this because I used to get so encouraged when Jim and Shirley Dobson had a fight. It's what we call negative encouragement. And one of our campaigns is we don't want people, Joe, to be defeated by their defeats. I think people get too discouraged, and then they default to their family of origin ways of reacting. And we've got to stop that. We can do better. Just don't get so discouraged that you say, this is pointless. It doesn't work with you. Don't do that, because at the end of the day, we're doing this for Christ, not for our spouse, not for our children.
Well, excellent words to end on. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Egerich. It's been just a great conversation. I think some really uplifting information for any parent who's listening today, just to be encouraged by your words. So thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. The book is Love and Respect in the Family, The Love Children Need by Dr. Emerson Egerich. Obviously, more resources there, as he mentioned. We'll also have a link to his website on our Faith Radio page. Thanks so much for listening today, and have a great afternoon.